welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's show, I am honored to have in the studio Betsy Polk and Maggie Chotas. I think I got that right.
Yes, you did, Leah.
Of the Mulberry Partners. Betsy is an author, speaker, keynote speaker, workshop leader, facilitator, mediator, and board certified coach. She's like me. She's got all these things coming
that's
after
right,
her name.
That's right.
Betsy received a bachelor's degree from the University of Massachusetts Amherst and a master's degree in organization development from the American University's NTL program. She lives in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, with her lively family. That's her description, lively family.
It's true.
Maggie is an author, keynote speaker, workshop leader, facilitator, and leadership coach. Maggie attained a BA from Swarthmore College and an MA from St. John's College in Annapolis and an MA in school administration from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She lives with her husband and two children in Durham. And together they founded the Mulberry Partners. The consulting firm is known for getting people to work together, and that's what we're talking about today, Power Through Partnership. Their book on about how women lead better together. It celebrates the benefits that women can find when they work together and debunks the myths of what it's like for women to work together. And this message is resonating with everyone. And so let's just jump right into it, ladies, and spend an hour talking about working together.
Okay. Sounds great.
So how did you guys get together? And then what made you decide to write this book?
Well, Maggie, you want me to do the get together part and you do the write the book part?
Sure. Okay. Sounds good.
So this is Betsy, and Maggie and I have a friendship that goes all the way back to high school in Charlotte, North Carolina. We teamed up for an English class assignment.
Sorry. It's okay.
We teamed up for an English class assignment that was supposed to be about the Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury, and we had so much fun injecting all this creativity into this project and thinking of new ways to do this, and I think our brainstorming and creativity and imaginations went beyond the expectations for the project, but we just got so into it and had so much fun, and so we promised ourselves that someday we would work together for real. We would find a way. So we pursued separate paths. My background's in organization development consulting. Maggie's background is in education. And we wondered how we were ever going to merge these paths. And then lo and behold, we found ourselves in the same area code, kind of in the same spots in life. Both of us had taken breaks from the work we were doing. We both have very young children at the time, and we're figuring out our next acts. And Maggie's mom is a therapist who would often said to us and to others that when men are ready for something, they often jump right in, and women find themselves thinking that we need one more thing, one more degree, one more certification.
Or it's got to be
perfect.
Right there, sister.
Right, right. And we found ourselves, yeah. We caught ourselves in that same trap. We were doing the same thing. Like, well, maybe I'll go back to school for this, or maybe I'll do this, and maybe we're not ready yet for this. And we stopped ourselves. We recalled Maggie's mother's words, and we thought maybe this is the time. So we teamed up for a pilot project.
You jumped in 2003, mm-hmm. Named the company Mulberry Partners. And take it away.
Yeah. And we realized, after we'd been working together for a while, Betsy and I, this is Maggie, we realized that we were getting so many benefits from that work, that we were getting flexibility, mutual support, our confidence was being bolstered, we were able to define success on our own terms. We were just loving the work that we were able to do together and loving the way that we were able to work together. And at that point, we started wondering, are other women getting this from their work together too? First of all, who are the other women who are working together? We could think of a lot of men.
Yeah, I loved that in your book. You know, and I started thinking, Evan Costello, Laurel and Hardy. I mean, you go through comedians, you go through business groups, you do this, and it's like, but you know, you don't come up. Thelma and Louise, they went off the cliff. So I mean, it's
right.
Like, so when you start thinking about it.
Yeah, so that where are we out there in the world? And still, it is so remarkable to us that we've been traveling and talking to a lot of different groups, and we always ask them, who are the male partners you can think of? And there's always someone new. There's always a new duo or trio who we hadn't thought about before, and we've thought about this a lot. Last week, someone said Harley Davidson. Well, right. We never even thought of Harley Davidson. But women, it's we women in partnership are out there, but we are really under the radar. So when we started looking for other women to talk with to see if they were experiencing what we were experiencing, first we had to find them. Mm-hmm. And that was quite a detective task. We had to, every time we saw a woman's name who was a co-leader or a co-CEO or a co-president or a co-board chair, anything with a co involved, we would go digging to see if...
Was the co a man or a woman?
Exactly. Right, first, right. Yeah. And any time it was a woman, we would make note of it and we would collect these names. And it took us a few years till we really had a robust group of women partners. I think we started with 18. And we started reaching out and wanting to hear their stories and hear what they were experiencing.
Well, I know when I started my company, it's been almost 13 years ago now. I started it, and one of the first speaking things I went was a women's conference for kids, you know, young ladies coming out of master's programs and undergrad and saying, okay, how do women work together? And they wanted us to talk about the queen bee syndrome, right, which is one of those typical things that everyone expects. And I'm like, I didn't know. I mean, I'm used to being the only woman in the room in finance and corporate America. But queen bee, what was that? And it was just one of those things that even the women had that in their mindset.
Right. Well, we found that, as Maggie was saying, you know, we reached out to these women, we found that they were realizing these benefits from working together. And like us, they had been warned against working together. They had, we ended up talking with some women in South Africa who were amazingly, incredibly strong women. Each brought her huge portfolio to this work, Piatona, and they each had worked under Nelson Mandela in some way or another to debunk apartheid, to dismantle apartheid. And then they decided to develop this firm committed to rebuilding the infrastructure of South Africa, right? So they were warned. The big piece of advice they got from lots of people, and you're nodding because you remember this, but the big piece of advice was you shouldn't do it because strong women will kill each other. You will kill each other with your stilettos. And they're all still alive today. They've all made a commitment to do this work. They're all very productive and collaborative. So, but it was this, and we talked with many other women who said, I love to be in partnership, but I'm afraid of it. I'm afraid of what could happen in terms of, you know, I've always been warned that women shouldn't work together. And we're finding that women work together incredibly well.
Well, but I think it's also underlying that as values. Do you share values?
Right.
Do you share a goal? Do you share mutual respect? And then when you see, I mean, I know when I started my company, I thought, well, the women will help me. And I was like, sometimes the women were the worst ones out there. Like, you know, you have to have a hard time too. We had a hard time coming up in the 60s and the 70s. Why should it be easy now? And so there were some of those, but not everyone was that way.
Right, right. And we found that the partners we talked with have gotten a huge amount of support from each other and from other women. And the women we talked with, the partners, turned out to be our mentors. You know, they always seemed to have the right story or the right piece of guidance as we needed it as we went along. This, we didn't go into it for that, but we sure got a lot.
There's
out
nothing
of it.
New under the sun. So chances are another women partnership would have experienced in some way the same lessons. So
really helping us imagine new phases of our own partnership in terms of what we were trying to do with the business and also in how we were working together. So that was such a gift to us. And the reason we wrote the book was to share those stories and these paths that women can take so that partnership becomes more of a widely known model that can be replicated by women all over the world.
Let's talk about, I think it's chapter 2 in your book, it's the myths and you start debunking them. So let's talk about some of those myths, because I know anyone thinking of starting her business or thinking about partnering with another woman, she's going to hear these. So let's talk about some of those.
Right. So one of those being the strong women can't work together. Another being that that women don't know how to handle conflict in a productive way. So this idea that I was just telling my daughter on the way to school this morning, for example, back in the day, we grew up with slam books, which were at birthday or at spend the night parties. You would pass around your book and your friends would tell, you know, would write down what they really thought of you. So their innermost thoughts.
slam intends to be negative, so yeah, that's
well,
where I am.
To
right.
be honest, okay. is how it right. always started. Yeah. And my daughter was really flabbergasted that that actually happened. She said that she'd read about it in books, but she'd never actually known a person that that actually happened with. So, you know, we do have, I mean, in every myth, there's a little bit of truth. So there is a little bit of truth that has come up over time.
And it tends to be when we've been educated, our environment's coming up, different generations even, but women are taught to keep a level playing field. And so whatever it takes to keep that playing field level was right. often what someone will engage in, whether that's sabotage right. or support or, you know, rather than the woman that's at a higher level and more success reaching right. down and helping someone up, it tends to be the person on the lower level trying to pull the other person down.
Right.
So and then it leads to yeah. that competition.
Right. And just thinking about Maggie Slam book story, you know, I'm just thinking about all the boys who grew up playing sports
right.
and the honest, candid feedback they became used to getting from coaches. And so now we have a generation of girls who are
right.
playing in sports and playing on their playing fields, right? And are getting that kind
right.
of feedback. So we would like to think that this is all shifting and this is all going to change. And we hope that's the case. But that kind of feedback and that kind of, you know, I think the intention behind the slam book is probably pretty good, but what happens is when you don't know how to do it because you were taught to have
a
level
of playing field.
It
becomes a personal attack rather than saying.
You don't know how to do it, right?
You're too blunt or whatever.
Right. And you become scared of it, right? It becomes scary to do that. And yet.
And you have to do it in secret.
And you have to do it in secret.
Yeah.
And the women we talked with who are working really well together, and ourselves included, have figured out how. Because you can't have a business without some level
right.
of conflict, and you can't be afraid of it. You have to know how to use it. So you use it. You figure it out.
But today's modern slam book are social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were actually, my daughter and I were talking about that. Because it started with, she said she had gotten a text from a girl that was a TBH text, which means to be honest. And that text was actually something that was very, very positive. And so I was asking her about that. It just, well, it seems like social media would be a place where negative things come out. And she said, well, yeah, they can, but mostly that will happen in a more private setting, but that what she sees that in public, that it's more of a boosting people up, mm-hmm. which is a real
shift, as Betsy was talking
about.
But that coin and the values and how people are brought up, criticism has often been given as a personal attack. You don't do something right, so how many corporate worlds have you been in where someone's been called an idiot or, you know, things like that? I mean, at one company, they would throw things at you, right? They only did it once to me. I throw things back.
Yeah.
But it's that environment. So positive criticism. Everybody needs a critique. You need feedback saying this is wrong and this is wrong and this was what we think, you know, your process. But too often it becomes a personal, you got it wrong, you can't do kind of thing.
Which leads to another myth, which is the myth, and I think you alluded to this earlier, Lee, the myth of the superwoman.
Right.
You know, that if we're going to do it, we have to do this perfectly, because if we don't do it perfectly, then it's a mistake. And in fact, we're reading a great book right now, or I'm reading a great book, I'm about to pass it on to Maggie, it's written by a colleague of ours, but Mistakes I Made at Work. And it's all about these women, high-level, high-powered women talking about a mistake and how nobody told them it was okay to make a mistake. And
right.
how, you know, and one of them talks about the shame of making a mistake, shame versus guilt, and how it's this shameful feeling. Nobody else does this, and I did this, and what's wrong with me? Until she found out how many learnings she could get out of this and how much she could grow from it. But that's not something, you know, we didn't always grow up thinking that it was okay to make a mistake, so we have to be superwoman. We have to do it all perfectly. Everything we do has to be perfect. And
it's conditioning, it's dynamics, it's different environments, because I know I was always conditioned. There were certain things I could do. I could do anything intellectually, academically, but I wasn't graceful and I couldn't do sports. And so you kind of live out those roles. It's like your birth order roles. There are mm-hmm. assumptions. Everybody's going to fall into a role and fill that. And I think we do that in our corporate lives, our business lives, our professional lives. And if that dynamic of what you had with your sisters or your mother or your classmates, that comes into how you expect the world to be when you're in your professional life. And you
right.
carry over those skills or lack
right.
thereof
right, right.
in dealing with those
but
things.
Being honest about them, and we talked with some women who run a capital venture firm in New York, and it's very much based on their non-Wall Street values. They all left Wall Street firms to create their own place. But they really invested in measurements and assessments and tools that would help them understand those very things you're talking about so that they could be productive and not have all that baggage, so that they could be, well, you always have the baggage, but so they could be honest about whether this was a suitcase or a duffel bag or a big old steamer trunk.
Well, and you look at it, because like when you take some of those personality tests, you can get really frustrated with a client, a business partner, whatever, when they don't execute. But some people are not wired to execute. And so the team has to balance that out. Right. If this person always just wants to stay idea stage and this person always just wants to go and never has an original idea, that can be a really good balance if everyone recognizes that those complementary skill sets.
Right. And so the complement, being mindful of the complementary skills is a key way to debunk the myths. So you take whatever the myths are that we're growing up with as women. And by the way, this isn't just in the U.S. We recently came back from Fiji and Papua New Guinea, where we were brought in with the American Embassy to work with women there on women's empowerment and women working together. And it's very similar issues that what we heard there in terms of how women work together. But how you build, if having some key essentials in mind can really debunk those myths and make it so that we can have very positive, productive partnerships. And the compliment, being mindful of the complementary skills, the having the shared vision that you spoke about earlier, Lee, the shared values, knowing that you're going to face conflict and knowing that you're going to have to figure out how you're going to resolve the conflict or work with the conflict, even if it doesn't always get resolved, and how you can bring out the creativity there. These are pieces that women can put in place so that we can bring out the best and be able to partake of the benefits.
So what's another myth that you ran into, that a universal myth that you can see other places? And I know one of the things we say, when I deal with other cultures, they say the United States always focuses on what we do wrong. Other countries focus on what they do right. So did you see that carry over into the women, somewhat of the mistakes we make and those kind of things, or anything similar?
Yeah, in terms of the focus on what we do wrong. Well, I mean, I think it was that relentless pursuit for perfection. And that leads to another myth I was thinking when you were asking that, which is, I have to find the perfect partner. And it's, you know what, and that's impossible, so I can't do this.
You'll marry the non-perfect partner, right, but you won't go into business
exactly, right. So.
Yeah. Couldn't resist on that one, so.
Well, Maggie and I happen to have perfect spouses, so.
Oh. As perfect
for you. Perfect for you.
And if they're listening out there, right.
The roses should be on the table when they get home.
Right. But that myth, that idea that I'm going to do it myself because I can't find the perfect partner and I don't want to get this to get messed up and I'll never find her because it's a needle in a haystack and it's not even worth it, even though I think it's a really good idea. So that idea that partners are really hard to find. Well, we found, you know, we were talking with a friend of ours who had a solo business, and she was an entrepreneur, and for a long time she kind of held on to that, and then she realized she just couldn't do it all by herself, but who would she partner with? And then it just came to her, you know, this woman who had worked with her for years was right there, I hate to use that word, but just a complimentary, supportive, shared the same sense of values, shared the same vision, the same end goals, you know, equally committed, mutually accountable, all those pieces, she was right there, right in front of her the whole time.
But well, and it's, again, one of my colleagues says, if you don't have Velcro on the brain, it's not going to stick. So until you're ready for
it,
not going to notice it. It's just, you need that Velcro on the brain for whatever you're looking for to stick to it.
Right, and have to be open to taking this leap of trust and seeing what may happen with it, because there are no guarantees. I mean, there's no guarantee in partnership. There's no guarantee in any significant relationship. But knowing what you can do to make the best of it, and that it's worth it. You know, it's worth having the...
If you're committed to the relationship and you're going to make it work, mm-hmm. It's kind of like marriage. I've never been married, never found anybody perfect enough. That if you're going to make that commitment, it has to be a commitment, not saying, well, I can always divorce him next week, right?
Right.
You know, the Kim Kardashian effect.
Right. Who, by the way, partners with her sisters and her mother.
and that's in the business world, they have done really well about making this kind of dynamics work for them.
You know, another big myth, and this is more of a tension, I think, but a myth tension is this idea that we grow up being told, you know, your sister, your mother, your friends, they're your network. This is your network. These are your best friends. Be there for each other. And then in the same breath we get, but don't ever work together. You know, so why is that? You know, and that's just something we've really been trying to tease out. Why is that? Because there is this very fertile middle ground of women who are working together and bringing this strong network together with, you know, and making this work. But yet we're warned against it. And we're allowed to be friends. We should be friends. But we should not work together.
But even that's a kind of false assumption. Just right. Because you're related doesn't mean, I mean, I say I have little family. I have a lot of relatives. So it's not necessarily you're going to fit your life just because they're a blood relation and you're going to go through that. So again, if I looked in the corporate world, my mentors and the people willing to help me 9 times out of 10 were men.
Mm. Well, and that's another key piece of what we found is that, and you talked about this earlier, Lee, that there's an assumption that we should be able to make those things work. And then there are the myths that get in our way or that we have to debunk, we have to unravel in order to get to the heart of them. So neither of those is absolutely true. You know, it's not a given that we're going to be best buddies with women at work or women in our neighborhood. It's also not a given that we can't work with women in whatever capacity we want to work. So neither of those is absolutely true. So our work is to find how to make what is possible, how to bring that to life and create some almost new rules of engagement. You know,
so what do you mean by that? What process are you bringing people in a business together? Or people want to be a business, governments? What are you talking about?
As in learning how to be a partner and learning how to develop a partnership mindset so that you can access the benefits that come through partnership. And the research shows that businesses that run by partners are more sustainable and more financially successful, for example. So how are you able to access those benefits? Well, there you have to do things a little bit differently. You have to think like a partner. You can't think like a solo. And so through the work that we're doing with businesses and organizations is to help people learn how to think like partners and develop a partnership mindset, which means that my success is tied up with Betsy's success.
Right.
You know, we have that reciprocity, and we trust each other that, you know, each of us is bringing something different to the business. And our work is to figure out how to unlock that and how, for the sake of the business. So having that third entity that gives us something other than ourselves to focus on. So we've had to learn a lot over the last 12, 13 years. And the women we interviewed for the book also shared with us that. And so much of it has to do with learning how to deal with conflict, learning how to set those goals and the values. And as we interviewed the women who wrote the Nanny Diaries, as they told us early on, you know, this is not a partnership is not a going out to lunch, going shopping sort of relationship.
Right.
You know, the stakes are high. I mean, you're mixing money, you're mixing values, you're mixing your professional reputation. I mean, the stakes are really, really high. So you don't want to take that decision lightly. At the same time, you don't want to not consider it or not take the risk when it can give you so much in return. So how to make that happen is what we're
about. Most of the relationships that you saw with women because, like yourselves, you were friends and then stuff, or did they know each other before? Were there anybody that just looked around and said, I don't know her, but I like her reputation, and I reached out? And
yeah, so we went into it with an assumption. Based on our friendship, we had the assumption that, of course you had to know each other before. I mean, how could you go into, as Maggie just described, this high-stakes collaboration without having some sense of each other? And we learned, one of the big learnings was that, no, you didn't. Partners don't have to have a friendship or whatever kind of pre-existing relationship is not a prerequisite for a healthy partnership. We talked with women who were match-made, women who owned a large advertising agency in New York, were brought together. One wanted to start her own agency, but she knew she wanted a partner. So her client connected her with another partner, and they talked about instinct. They told us the story about how they sat down to talk. One got a muffin, and the way she split the muffin, you know, with the other one, the way she just very carefully and thoughtfully split the muffin so it would be fair, made the other one think that this really could work. And it was funny because as they were telling us this, they said, we don't even like blueberry muffins. Like, we don't even know why.
They're sitting there eating a blueberry muffin and neither one likes them.
Right. But, and yet, yeah, this way of taking care of each other wove its way, and they really focused. The agency was Kaplan Thaller in New York, and they went on to write a series of books about the power of nice and other books related to their business, but that one about being kind and being nice and what that means. But that very much and their partnership actually was a model, I think, throughout their organization. But anyway, but they were matchmade. So it all started because somebody brought them together, and we had other examples like that.
So in the partnerships, do you see that one tends to take the lead, say, in the business side and one in the service side, or do they trade off? I mean, do you see people trading off, playing to their strengths? How does it, is there always one that's the leader?
Well, there's a real variety there. And one of the key benefits of being women in partnership as opposed to a male-female partnership is that there's no preset assumption about who's going to be the public face. So what research is showing about men and women in partnership is that there is a push from the larger culture that the man will be the public face. He'll be the decision maker. He's the one out there that people want to talk to and connect with, whereas the woman is kind of behind the scenes. Maybe she's doing everything, making the business runs, but she's not the public face. So women in partnership have to figure that out. Since there's not a default, that it's a real opportunity for women to step up. For Betsy and me, we started out 50-50 and made sure we would share everything. We learned all parts of the business. Over time, we have become more specialized. Betsy does a lot of the social media. I do a lot of the financial pieces. And we both consider ourselves public faces of the company. And it's a real range in the women that we've talked with. But it is a key piece that both when women are involved, there is an expectation that both women are at the table. Whereas that can be much harder. Not that it can't be done in male-female partnerships. We're not saying that. It certainly can be done. But it can be much more challenging because the external culture is wanting to confer the decision-making on the man, the public face onto the man.
So are there age dynamics in here too? So did you see partners that were different generations, a millennial with a boomer, or those types of things? And how did that dynamic impact it?
Yeah, we also went into the assumption, and we've heard this assumption from a lot of people, that they're, you kind of have to be in the same spot in life. And we were telling our story, we were in the same spot in life.
We mentioned
that we both had young children, but we have found that that's not the case. I mean, what really matters is that you have that same sense, that you're able to talk through what it is you want to accomplish, that you're mutually accountable for it, that both partners or all partners, however many there are willing to bring their skills to the table, that whatever skills are missing, you're willing and able to either fake that to compensate for that or find someone else to bring those skills forward. But you're willing to fulfill all those essentials. It doesn't matter. The age piece, we've talked with multi-partners at multi-ages, and I don't know that we've ever found that it was because of an age difference that a partnership didn't work. Sometimes we did find in one case there was kind of an assumption about a life difference where the partners were in life that they felt like we have to dissolve the partnership because one partner wanted to leave to raise her family and the other one wanted to keep running the business. And we had seen so many other partnerships where they were able to support each other through the long haul that we felt like they probably, who knows? I mean, there might have been other variables as well. And it wasn't our position to evaluate our partner's decisions at all. But we did feel like there is this long story there and that they perhaps over the long haul, that could have been a wave that could have been.
Well, and it's kind of like one of those other myths out there that, the mom stays home with the kids or the mom's going to be the one that takes them to the doctor or whatever. And so even in hiring decisions, people will often make the assumption in consulting or employment decisions that if I hire two women, well, are they going to show up? Are their kids going to get sick and they have to do that? Are they reliable? Is there going to be something that interferes? Yeah. Are they going to get emotional? If I say this or if I don't, and it's those stereotypes then in marketing your business is something you have to think about too, is especially if you're marketing to a male dominated area and they have those myths and to be debunked in their head when you're marketing.
It's very true, and certainly those myths and assumptions are alive and well. We were at an event last week where we were having a very lively conversation about that very topic, where it really we had to keep thinking about what is possible and focusing on the vision,
right,
and working with whoever, you know, whatever's going on in life in terms of that flexibility, how an organization can value the people working there and create structures that support, again, those key benefits that we see in women partnerships that are working well together, where there is the support, there is the flexibility, there is the confidence building, there is the real belief and trust that the work will be accomplished. It requires a reimagining.
Yeah. Well, and also, right. I mean, I think one person is only human.
Right.
But a partnership duo is superhero, can be super heroic, you know, in terms of being able to
power
be there.
Twins unite.
Power twins unite, wonder, right. Power wonder, twins
wonder,
activate.
Wonder twins, yeah.
Right, right. Right. But in terms of being able to be there for,
that's right.
You know, to be flexible and to be able to stretch. And, you know, if one partner can't be there for something, then she knows fully that her partner is going to be there and represent her just as she would be represented. You know, and there is that fluidity and there's that real trust in each other. And there's also this sense of we're not just doing this for ourselves. I think maybe men do this as well. But I know women sometimes, if this is just about me, then I could let this go.
Right.
No, okay, it's not so important. It's just about me. But if I'm accountable to someone else and if I have a business at stake and that's the name – and that name isn't just about my name, the business, but it's about my partner's name. I'm going to make sure that I'm upholding that, and I'm as accountable as I can be for that.
Right.
So that entity and the accountability that comes with it, I think, creates a strength that makes it very hard to dismiss anyone because of gender or whatever assumptions there might be.
I know in my business, doing business consulting, and one of the international assignments I had, I said, now, we're asking you because they're letting the contract in the States, but they never hire women. And I'm like, I was like, okay. So I did my thing. And they said, they want to talk to you. And I was like, okay. And they're like, but I don't understand. I'm like, why? They said, well, you don't have gray hair. I was like the youngest one putting in for the gig. And you're female. And I'm like, yeah, I've been that way, you know, kind of all my life. And they're like, I don't understand. And so then the questions when that company was talking to me was like, well, you do realize a lot of people won't want to be in the room listening to you because you're a woman. I'm like, okay, that's fine, but they have to be. You're making them, right? And so they have to be there. But to those dynamics, I said, and then the government had to give me permission to go in, and they said, well, can't she send a man? And they're like, no. And, you know, and that even the dynamic in the government places to get permission to come in to work, to do those kind of programs and things, it's an interesting dynamic.
And that business having the faith in you. You know, partnering you.
I think they were shocked
way.
When I walked in, you know, but they do ask the questions like, how are you going to be dressed? How does your hair cut? What religion are you? Do you have kids? And it's completely illegal here, but it's not illegal in any other countries. And I didn't have a problem with it. I was like, you know, and everybody's like, well, we'll talk to them. I was like, no, it's their country. I'm going there. And if that's what they need to be comfortable with, we do it. But it is a different environment to be in there and being female was a dynamic.
So how did the project go?
It went well. I banged on every guy in the room without having interviewed them on what they'd been doing wrong, which was kind of amazing to them because, you know, I was teaching a Mexican company to compete against China, which was kind of fun.
Oh, wow.
And so you'd look at those dynamics. Where would the issues typically be? What those kind of things, and then go across all the functional areas. But you could see their eyes getting bigger and bigger, and they're like, the only woman in the room was telling them what they were doing wrong. And I hadn't even spoken to them, right? And so that kind of gave a different dynamic and a different credibility. But, you know, is there a man you can send? No. Mm-hmm. And they're just completely shocked that they'd have to take a woman. If they want the material, they have to take it. I mean, that was where it was. And so it was an interesting dynamic for that government to have to think that way.
And if you had been partnered with a man, there would be that temptation to send the man.
Right. Right.
Not with me. So, yeah, so that's that kind of...
Yeah, that's
yeah,
the
a
push.
Lot of people would be...
Yeah, so the push like, from the external culture.
Yeah.
Even and that's in the book we talk about the difference between equality and equity, where equality as individuals, we can say we're on the same ground,
right.
We have the same values, we share the same vision, there's all these pieces that make us very equal. when it comes to equity in the larger world, men and women, unfortunately, there's still this gap. Right. We hear women who are looking for capital, for example, female entrepreneurs, you know, the investment bankers will say, well, and literally will tell them they need to get a man
to run the business.
And, you know, that's, yeah. I mean, the first time I heard that, I was completely shocked. And now I've heard it so many times, I'm not shocked anymore. But there's a lot of this equity, the inequity that's going on behind the scenes, that even though we might feel like, I know Betsy and I felt very equal. I mean, we were right. free to be you and me generation. You know, that's, we grew up thinking girls can do anything. But when you kind of pull back the layers of the onion there, we still are really grappling with this.
Well, and it's kind of interesting because the articles, I've written over 800 articles, and so they're out there on finance topics and lending and funding and all this kind of stuff. But what I noticed in foreign countries is they reduced my name down to L.A. Mm-hmm. And so then I was getting offers to go speak different places. And I'm thinking, and one of them was to speak at an Egyptian banking conference. And I'm like emailing the guy, I thank you for the invitation, but do you realize I'm American female and a Christian? Don't think it's going to work. And he was like, yeah, because it was a Muslim banking group. And that's not going to work. And there's some dynamics in some countries. You just know it's not going to work. But he thanked me for understanding it and pointing it out to him. But my materials are fine as long as everyone knows doesn't know I'm female, right? And so it was kind of an interesting dynamic. So they still read the articles. They still like the information. They just didn't tell anybody I was female. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the dynamics you have in different parts of the world.
And we found, here in the U.S., we found some of the partners we talked with really saw it as a benefit. I mean, they get many benefits from working together as women, but they also saw it as a benefit in terms of how they were perceived by the public to be two women,
right.
or more than two women. We talked with two women who have created a campaign called the Kind Campaign. Two very young women. They started this right out of college, and they go around the country and educate young girls about bullying and how to be genuinely kind to each other. And they talked about the benefit they get, the leverage they get because they're two young women.
Right. Well, I know when I started my business, you know, I'd go to a finance meeting group, you know, association meeting, and I'd be the only woman in the room. Well, who did everyone remember? The only woman in the room.
Right.
So in marketing your business, if you're often the only one out there doing it and female, it's great for your branding. It's great to get noticed. And so there's upsides and challenges, but it's fun to do it. So what lessons have all these partners learned that you can share?
What have they learned, or what have
what both? What okay. have you learned, and what have you? What have they learned? What have you learned from them, and what have you guys learned in your practice?
One thing they've learned, and we've learned, is that conflict doesn't go away. Yeah, you know, that's a normal part of any relationship, any human experience, and it doesn't go away. And developing strategies for dealing with it, and knowing what your buttons are in terms of what sets you off in terms of conflict is very important going into it. And being able to have the hard conversation, which is another learning. Being able to talk about that, being able to talk about everything from the money, you know, we often shy away from talking about money, but talking about all those pieces from the get-go and then knowing how you're going to continue to talk about those is fundamental to success. What else? Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about that conflict piece some more, learning how to use conflict for creative purposes. That's been a real... That we learned that from the partners we interviewed. We talked. I mean, it really crystallized for us. We were interviewing the women who owned Chroma Gallery in Savannah, and they were two artists, and they were finding themselves embroiled in conflict. And at one point, they were both painting. They had their individual canvases. They were both painting away, and they were bickering about something.
And their paintings reflected that.
Exactly. And so what they ended up doing was literally painting through the conflict and creating a new kind of painting that they called Loja, which is a combination of their names, Lori and Jan. And that went on to become art that they sold in their gallery. Now, we're not all artists, at least not visual artists, although, you know, we might have a lot of creativity in the way we work. But what we learned from that was how can we work through the conflict? How can we not be afraid of it? How can we unleash the potential that's coming through it that can benefit the business?
Well, and I think it gets back to we tend to think everything is a democracy. Everybody gets an equal vote, or we have to compromise or whatever. And conflict usually tells us no, we both have really strong values and opinions mm-hmm. on that, and then we need to work through and either persuade the other person, you know, or compromise. Something that has to happen in that communication, but it gets down to our ability to communicate why we take that position, you know, either give reasons, facts, whatever it is, and then hear the other person's side and what they're presenting.
Right, right. And it also means being flexible
right.
sometimes. So, for example, when we were working on our book, we were finding ourselves, you know, both Betsy and I love to write, and we were, like, Betsy would write something, I would write over it, then I would write something and Betsy would write over it. And it was just it wasn't working.
Vicious circle.
It was driving us both pretty crazy, I think it's fair to say. And, you know, after a while, we just had to call it and to say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Is this working? Are we accomplishing our goals? Are we having fun? And the answer was sort of no on all those fronts. And so we needed to think of a new way to approach the writing, and we did. You know, where we kind of broke our 50-50 arrangement, and we said Betsy was going to be the lead author, and I was going to be fully invested, but Betsy was going to be the lead author. And it wasn't, we weren't going to keep doing that same pattern over and over. But it really required us recognizing what was going on, having a discussion, well, not just one discussion, many discussions about it. And
Did you share a blueberry muffin?
No, I don't think so. Okay. But we did have a lot of conflict
in cars.
We probably
had a Kind bar.
Yeah, okay. Right.
We tend to share Kind bars.
Yes.
But, I mean, it is there. And it's like sometimes someone has to step and have 90% of the role and the other one 10. And the next time, you take the lead on the book and you do it.
Yeah.
As a writer and an artist, I can't imagine sharing that creative process. I'd share with my editor, but, again, that's a different
role.
Stepping back and she's asking, well, did you mean this? And, you know, word it maybe this way. But that dynamic of creating together, I mean, that's an interesting thing to partner in. And I've always wondered about that in partnering writing.
And we could have, I mean, we had, as it was a long process. So we had many different ways of approaching what the end product would look like. And at one point, I think we talked about having different chapters where we each would
alternate
a voice. But we really, really, one thing we knew we wanted was one voice.
Right.
We didn't want it to be this kind of trunk.
I've read those books where they switch back and forth, and I'm like, you know, I have to go look and say, who's writing?
Even,
you know,
it's right, like, right. Or even to put it in the voices of the partners, and that didn't work either. We really wanted it to be one voice because we wanted that one voice. One thing we didn't mention was when we were first starting to work together, we looked for a guide that would help us navigate our way through partnership, and we never found the guide we needed. We found plenty.
That's why I wrote my first book too. Yeah. I couldn't find a book on starting a business the way I wanted.
Right, and we found a lot of books about like legal entities or how to do this or how to do this in terms of partnership, but we never found how to preserve what we were looking for at the time is how to preserve the core of the partnership, the friendship, or whatever it was at the core of the partnership to ensure its success as a partnership. So anyway, so we knew that what we wanted was that voice to guide others, that united, shared voice. And so it took a while, but by the time we probably got to really writing, that part wasn't that hard.
So when you wrote Power Through Partnership, How Women Lead Better Together, how long did it actually take from conceiving the idea to getting a book in hand?
9 years.
9 years. Wow.
But
That
was a lot of research. It was a lot of finding the right agent, finding the publisher.
The mechanics can frequently slow you down.
Right, right. And so it was a lot of learning along the way. Yeah.
And it was a new idea. And we didn't appreciate how challenging it can be to get a new idea out in the marketplace when other people don't recognize it. And we had our instinct and our experience, and we had the stories of partners over time, but we didn't realize just how new of an idea it was. Through the writing process through the whole finding the agent and the editor and that whole process really crystallized us. We had this solution. We called the way we worked the partnership solution, but we didn't think about what the problems really were. Mm-hmm. It took us a long time to really unpack the equity issues that were at the heart of this and just all the other layers of things that are getting in the way of women. So by the time we actually got to writing the book was 9 months, from actual draft to final. But all the percolation and leading up to that was 8 years.
So is there going to be another book?
We're starting to think about that.
Ideas are in development. So if anybody out there has suggestions, send them our way.
So how would they get in touch with you?
Oh, well, they could find us on Facebook at Betsy and Maggie. They can find us on Twitter at Powership, which, by the way, Powership is what we, you know, somewhere in those 9 years, it hit us that we, this partnership wasn't, partnership was not the, fully the word for all this. That this needed another word. You know, men have bromances, and men have buddies, and men have, you know, men have all sorts of
words. I have a friend who says she has workships.
Yeah, workships. But, you know, men, you know, but we, but what did we have? What do women have to describe this, this kind of, this mutually supportive, focus on success, bringing life, personal success, personal sanity to life and work relationship? So we thought of Powership as the word for that. So our Twitter is at Powership.
And the book website is www.powerthrough, that's T-H-R-U, powerthroughpartnership.com. And then the business website is themulberrypartners.com.
So when you're in working with your clients, what is it that you're doing for them, and how do you work with them?
Well, it's a very similar process to what we're doing with working with partners, which is we're helping them figure out what it is that they want to achieve, what their vision is, what their goals are, how can they unleash the energy and the play to people's strengths in the organization, what do they want to keep doing, what do they want to let go of, what do they want to grow more of, and how can they develop practices that make this sustainable, so that this is an ongoing way of work. I mean, we're constantly trying to work ourselves out of work with clients, so that they are learning how to do these pieces on their own. So we're there to help them figure it out, and then encourage them to keep doing what's working, and to build bridges to bringing their visions to life.
So you're talking about maximizing the strengths. Do you help them with diagnostic tools? What all do you do with your clients?
We do as needed. We don't have a set of assumptions that we bring into any client project or any coaching project. We really go to where the client is and look at what's getting in the way, and if a diagnostic makes sense, if an assessment makes sense, if what, you know, we really explore with them what's going to make sense and what they're willing and able to do. You know, also it's important to us to have a leader's involvement in the process. And you know, you're shaking your head, you know all this.
If you don't have a champion and the leadership isn't committed, it ain't going to change.
It's not going to change, right. So, you know, before this work, I saw a lot of, you know, I was in Washington, D.C., and saw a lot of projects that ended up being like kind of the intervention du jour and check off the box and put it up on the shelf.
We used to call them Baskin-Robbins, 31 flavors of initiatives.
Yeah, right. And so, then somebody else comes in the next day and everyone rolls their eyes because, okay, here comes somebody else. And then
They just came back from another seminar. So what are we doing now?
Exactly. Right? And it loses all meaning, and it builds jaded. And not only loses meaning, right, but it builds jadedness in the organization, which only adds to the problem. So we also, you know, another key value of ours is to focus on building on the success that already exists. And Maggie mentioned that, but, you know, not starting from scratch, not going back to this idea of perfection or focusing on mistakes or whatever it is. We really focus on where the client is and what have they already achieved? Because, you know, of course it has to, and so often we don't think of our successes, and thinking of them, just the thinking of them, is a key to moving forward.
Yeah, we can all name all the big mistakes, the things we said shouldn't have, the things we beat ourselves up about. Right. But name your successes, and people will pause longer 9 times out of 10. I think women pause longer than men.
Right. Well, first of all, we don't want to be caught bragging about it, but, you know, but just being really honest about these are my successes, so I can build on those. Right. Yeah. Versus building on the whole of my mistakes.
So if you had to say 3 things that you would tell anyone about pursuing a partnership, what 3 things, or a powership, let's say it more accurately, what 3 things would you want to talk about?
Well, we should do 1, 2, 3. So one thing would
I'll
be...
I'll let each of you have 3.
Oh, 3. Okay, gosh. Okay. One thing would be if you're looking for a partner and you're thinking that there's no one out there and it's a needle in the haystack, look around, because potential partners are everywhere. Two, if this is something that you are interested and excited about, then really be willing to have the conversations that you need to have from the get-go, and think about how you're going to sustain those conversations throughout. Because the partnerships we've seen that haven't worked are those that, one, they jumped right into it and they weren't willing to have those honest conversations, or two, they did it in the beginning but they didn't sustain those or think about how. And that doesn't have to be constant communication all the time. That could kill a partnership too, but a way of consistent communication that works for both partners.
It's essentially having a powership plan, right? Like a business plan. What are your values? What are you putting together? You know, you're supposed to plan your business, and if there's more than one person, if you're not on the same page to begin with and checking that periodically,
right,
then you get lost and you have more conflict.
Right. We've talked to this woman.
Maybe that's your next book, Powership Plans.
Maybe. We talked to someone. We happened to meet her on a plane in San Francisco, and she talked about a company that she had co-founded, and they both, you know, brought their values. They both really thought about how it was going to work, but the company grew and grew, which was wonderful. But they grew with the company, and they didn't have the chance because it was growing so rapidly. They grew apart, right? And the third thing I would just say is, we talk about what a powership mindset is. One of the things we discovered was the stretch of partnership. Even if you're not working together with your partner, or even if you're not in a partnership, you can take this mindset of, as Maggie described earlier, of promoting someone else's success, of looking at what is the vision we're trying to achieve here, and how do I bring out your best and you bring out my best. It doesn't have to be an intentional, formal partnership. It can be a mindset that you bring into all sorts of relationships, and it really can open things up. So those would be my three.
Maggie?
To listen to your gut when you're having those conversations about whether this is the right partner for me, to not move forward if you have doubts.
Yeah.
Well, gut instinct is essentially the materialization of your subconscious working.
To listen to it. Yeah, explore it. Ask those questions. Have the conversations further with a potential partner. Make sure that you feel like you're on steady footing for moving forward before you move forward. It's much easier not to start a partnership than to get into it and have to dismantle it.
Yeah,
exactly.
The pilot projects.
That's what I was going to say next.
I knew you were.
Which was the pilot project. And we encourage all formal business partners to try something out together. Try a project together. Take it on. See what your work styles are like. See what the communication is like. And then evaluate it. What worked well? What didn't? What would we need to do differently if we were going to move this to the next level? And then thirdly, I would say, what would be my third one? There's so many things to pick from.
What if?
This is tied up with the instinct, but to really investigate the what ifs, like what could go wrong.
Right.
As well as what can go right. You know, sometimes like
that pros and cons list.
Yes. And also that, wild success, which was actually the downfall of the story Betsy was just telling about the woman we met in San Francisco. They were so successful that the partnership at the middle of it just eroded. So explore all those.
Where success comes, money is there, and money creates conflicts.
Yep, money can. If you don't have that,
if you have the strong
fundamental foundation. But don't get stuck in the what ifs. You know, yes, there are a lot of things that can go that can be challenging to a partnership. That goes without saying. Explore how you would handle those, and then if you're at a point where you feel like you're on the same page in terms of the vision, the values, the complementary skills, the working relationship, the communication style, all of those pieces to move forward with it.
Work on a few projects together, get the feel for it, test drive.
Yep.
And then formalize it.
Yep, exactly. And then do formalize it, right? A partnership agreement, a powership compact, and then bring a lawyer in, do it, you know, really take it seriously. And once you make that decision to activate it.
Like you talked about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a commercial on them, and I think it's about investing. And they look back and they have the little yellow and blue stickers. and says, what do you think about in the past? And they put, I think the good things are on yellow and the bad ones on blue, but what are you thinking in the future? And the majority of the wall is yellow. Nobody wanted to put blue stickers up. But that's what you really have to do. You have to think about, okay, if this happens, this is the rule for how we deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If someone wants to exit, well, I can buy them out. Yes, I can do this. We can find another partner. We can do these different things.
And thinking about the strategies for what you'll do is so helpful. So you can help you get out of the what ifs, because those what ifs can be so paralyzing if they overtake. Well, what if this happens, and then that could happen, and then that could happen. And so often, I mean, Sheryl Sandberg writes a whole section about that, about how we can get paralyzed by that. So it's
women,
that balance.
In particular.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're conditioned to try to preserve relationships. And even that's even to agreeing to go into a partnership when our instinct's telling us no, because we don't want to say, right, well, I don't think we're going to fit.
Right. And that's our greatest, I mean, that's what, you know, that's what makes these partnerships work, and that's what works against them. That is the heart of the myths, and it's the heart of the success, the relation, our strength in relationships.
So, again, the book is called Power Through Partnership, How Women Lead Better Together, Betsy Polk and Maggie Ellis-Chotis. I'm always afraid I'm going to mess up people's names because everyone always does mine. And it's talking about how women can work together better, smarter, maximize success. And you can reach them at
Twitter at Powership, Facebook Betsy and Maggie, or our website at
Power Through Partnership. That's THRU and themulberrypartners.com.
Thank you, ladies, for being on the show.
Thank you, Lee.
And until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things. And we're going to thank our sponsors and talk to you next week.
I mean, all that everybody's supposed to.
Focus on Business are proud to support Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina, serving the Triangle. Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina is your community Make-A-Wish. To learn more about what Make-A-Wish is doing, visit their website at www.eastnc.wish.org. That's www.eastnc.wish.org. Or give them a call at 1-800-432-WISH. That's 1-800-432-9474. Focus on Business and WCOM-FM are proud to support the Ronald McDonald House of Durham. To learn more about the Ronald McDonald House of Durham, visit their website at www.ronaldhousedurham.org. That's www.ronaldhousedurham.org. Or give them a call at 919-281-1065.
Focus on Business and WCOM-FM would like to thank Focus Resources for underwriting the Focus on Business radio program. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com.